This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Now, our next studio guest we have is Tarek Frimpong, who is here, who's an actor, singer, dancer. Is there anything that you don't do, Tarek, basically?
Now, whatever needs to be done, really.
Welcome to the show, Tarek.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You're more than welcome. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about, well, just generally about your career, but let's start off with where you started, I suppose, as far as the arts go. How did you start off in what you're doing now, and where did the love come from?
Yeah, cool. Well, my mum actually owns her own dance school and runs her own dance school, yeah.
Wow. So quite often when that's the case, you don't want to have anything to do with it. Oh, I'm not going to be a dancer.
Yeah.
Obviously, you embraced it.
Yeah, I guess it was the reverse in this case. Funnily enough, actually, both my parents worked as professionally dancers, so I guess you could say it was in my blood.
Right. So, well, you know, like, what's your parents? Tell us about them.
So my mum is Australian and my dad is Ghanaian or West African, and they both met on a dance job in Japan.
Oh, wow.
At a hotel, I believe it was. That's where they met. And then my mum kind of went over to Africa and visited and met the family and things like that. And then eventually they got married and he moved over here. And then I was born here in Australia. I guess it's been in my blood from a very young age. I remember growing up and my dad teaching me to six-step and break dance with his DJ decks in what I called the doof-doof room of our house, I think. And then, yeah, ever since I can remember too, my mum's run her own dance school called Dance Explosion.
Oh, yeah.
Since I think I started classes at 4 years of age, but before that I was in the cot bopping around while she was teaching classes as well.
And what about your dad? Is he still involved in that sort of world?
Not so much. He does still DJ, actually. He was doing a lot of, like, DJing at different clubs around Melbourne, hip-hop music and Afro beats and things like that. He's doing less of that now, but he kind of works in the community. He was working for the Salvation Army, and he's now working at a juvenile delinquency centre where he goes in and kind of teaches the kids how to cut their hair and, like, things to do with music and a lot of things actually associated with the hip-hop culture.
Right,
so
okay.
I guess that's where he's still linked, yeah.
Right, and you've got an interest in that style of music?
Yeah, definitely. I think I have a vast taste in music, but there's definitely a part of me that loves hip hop for sure.
Right. So, okay, you were learning from your mum at her classes. So, what happened when you're like at school? Were you in school productions?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I was in my primary school. I've been in musicals since I was in primary school and throughout high school. But actually, when I was about, I think it was 10 or 11 in 2005 or 2006, I landed the role of young Simba in Disney's The Lion King when it came to Australia for the first time.
Oh, fantastic.
So I played, baby Simba or young Simba here in...
What age?
I would have been 10 or 11.
Gosh.
I think it was 2005, yeah.
So you were one of a couple
that
did the role?
At the time there were four of us who I think did two nights a week of performances due to child working laws.
Of course,
Got to perform at the Regent Theatre, and that was, I guess, my christening into the world of performing arts and theatre, at least on that scale.
And how was that experience for a 10-year-old?
Yeah, that's the thing. At the time, I had no idea. At the time, I was like, this is so fun, singing and dancing and making all these new friends and the lights and the costumes and this guy's going to teach me to do a backflip. I was like, this is great. And then in hindsight, I'm like, wow, that was like... Especially The Lion King as a show too, that was something really phenomenal and super special. And even at that young age, I was lucky enough to travel with the show. We went to Shanghai, China.
Oh, brilliant.
And also did the show there for 3 months. So it was an incredible ride, an incredible first gig, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you remember that experience, Tarek? And did that lead to the next thing, or is that something that you were sort of quite young at that point? So
I was quite young, but I definitely remember it vividly. Like, I remember being side stage before going on for the first time and watching the older performers and just the guys with voices that were incredible and the guys that could dance and do all these flips and things like that, and being incredibly inspired and pretty much knowing, I was like, before that I was like, I want to be Michael Jackson. Before that I was like, I just want to moonwalk and sing and dance, but then to be in, I guess, on a job where you're seeing how those skills can be used in a place of work, I was like, wow, I want to do this.
Now for obviously our listeners can't see you, but yeah. You're a person of colour.
Yes.
Which, and that would have been rare back then. That's another reason why you would have got the role, because, you look, you're not really African, are you?
But I'm, I guess, half African, because my dad is, West African, Ghanaian, but I guess I would say I'm, mixed or mixed race, with my mum being Australian. But also, obviously, as a 10-year-old, it wasn't something that I could comprehend at the time, but how special it was and how lucky it was to be part of a show like The Lion King that celebrates African culture.
Yep.
Throughout the music, the lyrics, and everything like that. At the time, it was just over my head, obviously. But
did,
now I'm
did
like,
your father talk very much about Africa to you as a kid?
He didn't talk to me as much about it, but he would dress me up in, like, for example, the traditional clothing, which, like, in Ghana is called a kente, which is like a kind of a fabric that people, in such a creative way, make their own kind of outfits out of. You just have the material, and you can kind of wear it how you like. So he would give me his kente, and we'd wear it and dress up and do photo shoots and things like that. And then with the music and the parties we'd go to and his friends' houses, they'd always be dancing and things like that. That at the time, of course, you're not really as aware of it. But now in hindsight, I'm really grateful for that exposure. And then as I've grown up and now in my 20s, or I'm 24 years of age, and I'm always looking to find out more about myself and where I come from and things like that, it's cool to make those links and then go back and ask him questions and things like that, which is really cool.
Yeah. So what happened after Lion King?
So after Lion King, did that, and it would have been 11 years old. That was amazing. Continued. At that point, I'd had no like formal singing lessons or acting lessons. I'd only done dance. And then after that, pretty much finished primary school, went on to high school. In high school, started taking singing tuition, singing lessons, started doing drama at high school, and did all my school musicals from year 7 to year 12. We did such a range from Urinetown to Jesus Christ Superstar to The Witches of Eastwick in Chicago. So that was an amazing and a really fun time, and cool to watch back on videos of that. Finishing up there, I went on to train at Patrick Studios Australia, PSA, and I did a year there at the performing arts course.
Yep.
And was kind of working as a dancer kind of throughout high school and during that time as well, with, I guess, live performance work and music videos and things like that, which was really cool. Then after a year of that, I kind of went on to my own training, so to speak, of going to my own classes and seeking a singing teacher that I was interested in and casual classes and things like that, until I got to about 21 and I was like, I'm going to move to London. Never having been to Europe before in my life, I was just like, I feel like there's more opportunity there. And I'd done things in Australia, a lot of dance work, a few contemporary-based shows, dancing on like X Factor and things like that behind artists, and Dancing with the Stars behind artists and things like that. And I was like, I feel like I want to go to London. I was like, I don't know, just London sounds good to me. So kind of packed my bags, super naive, super excitable, jumped on a plane and moved to London. And then kind of that trip changed my life, really, yeah.
So how did you find arriving in London, I suppose, as a 21-year-old with, obviously some experience in the industry? Did you have any contacts there? Or
No, I had no contacts whatsoever. Literally nothing. But at the time, it didn't worry me. It didn't stress me. I wasn't anxious. I was just like, this is great. I'd been to LA a few times and made some contacts over there. And that's actually where I met a few people from London. And they were like, you should come to London. You do really well. So I was like, cool, let me do that. But I think I'm so grateful that I was so naive going over there and just had this deep hunger to do something great, I guess.
So how did it start in London? How did you get started, I suppose, in London? What happened there?
So I kind of went over there and I had my CV and my showreel and my headshots, and I kind of just cold emailed every agent I could find online and was just like, hey, I just got here from Australia. This is me. Do you want to meet with me? Would you take me on? And before any of the agents actually got back to me, a performing artist, FK Twigs, who's like a pop pop alternate kind of alternative artist, but quite mainstream now, was having an audition for a world tour and needed some backup dancers, and that was in my third week. So I auditioned for that, and then ended up landing the role or getting the job, and it was probably one of the biggest, it was the biggest dance job in London that year in the commercial dance scene, and I got to go all over from Russia and to Norway to Canada and America and all these incredible places, and dance behind this artist who really used a fusion of hip-hop and contemporary in her dancing, which is something I love doing, fusing genres and doing something different. Her name's FKA Twigs.
Oh, yeah.
FKA Twigs. And that was kind of the first gig I did in London, and because of how big it was and how widely received it was, it kind of set me up for my time there. Just financially, I was able to have a backing to start with. I then kind of had a foot in the door to talk to agents and things like that, and people kind of recognized me within the dance scene, at least, to do teaching and things like that.
Right,
yeah.
Right. But then something happened.
Yeah.
That probably would was 100% change your life.
Yeah, definitely.
A movie?
Yeah, yeah. So then I think the audition must have come at around, I moved there in about February or March 2016, then maybe about 6 months in, an audition came through from my agent for Mary Poppins Returns, which was essentially, they were saying, Mary Poppins number two, Disney feature film.
The film.
Shooting in London, and there's a big dance number, essentially paying homage to Step in Time from the original, and they're looking for 20 male dancers, all ethnicities. Are you interested? And I was like, yeah, great. And it was at this point, any audition that comes through, I'm there, like, no matter what. I'm like, yes, that sounds like me. Went to this audition, did really well, got a callback, was like amazing amongst like what must have been thousands of dancers. Went to the callback, which was at the Pinewood Studios, which is where they shot a lot of the in-studio stuff in the film. And this was a big all day of dancing in front of the director, producers, executives, choreographers, everyone. It was like, yep, this is serious now, serious stuff. Got to the end, so I was like, amazing. Felt good about it. Then my agent gave me a call that night saying the team had asked me to come in and read for a role in the film, a supporting role that I'd not auditioned for initially. And they're like, are you interested? I was like, of course. When is it? They're like, tomorrow. I was like, great. They're like, can you do a Cockney accent? I was like, I hope so. And then went in the following day. And yeah, this is where the story gets interesting. Went in the following day for this audition. And at the time, I was freaking out. I think I was 22 at the time. And I was like, holy cow, I am auditioning for a role in a Disney feature film. This is a bit crazy, just having moved to London 6-7 months ago. But of course, whatever happens, you kind of go with it. Anyway, went in, did my best, ended up finding out that I didn't get the role. But they were like, but we'd love to have you in the film as a dancer if you're happy to accept. I was like, of course. It's kind of, not kind of, it is the best dance gig you can get. How you're looked after on set, how you're paid and everything like that. As a dancer, it's like the one. So went in, it was great. I essentially lost out on the role to a more established, older English actor who is incredibly talented, could dance, could sing, could act, could do it all. But went in day one of rehearsals, and the first thing I remembered was the director knew the guy's name who was playing that role, and then he knew my name, and he was like, Tarek, you come here. And I was always off his shoulder in a lot of the positions and things like that. Then he was kind of like, yep, and everyone else, you come here and that. And I was like, well, I think I was really close to landing this role. And then in a crazy turn of events, at about 4 weeks into the rehearsal process, I got a call one day from the co-choreographer who let me know that actually the guy who was playing that role had injured himself.
Oh.
And he was not going to be able to complete the shooting component of the film.
Yeah.
And the director and his partner, the producer, so Rob Marshall and John DeLuca, had asked if I would be interested in coming back in to re-audition essentially and put down some screen tests. And of course, as you do, go with it. And I was like, yes, of course. I went back in. And then the next day after going in and putting stuff down on test again, it's cool because I'm a very, I guess, analytical person, and I look back. Obviously, I think it's important of any performer to know how you can improve. So from the first audition, I was like, this was actually my first screen audition as opposed to theatre or anything on stage. And I was like, I think I know what I did wrong. So I feel like I applied those things. And then the day after, I found out I had landed the role of Angus in Mary Poppins Returns.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how big a role was it?
It was pretty crazy. It's a speaking role in the film, and I play a character's name who's Angus, and he's an all singing, dancing, smiling Leary, so a gas lamplighter of the 1930s. Yep. And I was playing the sidekick of the character Jack, who's played by Lin-Manuel Miranda. So I had a lot of time on set with him, which even as I speak about it now, I get goosebumps and my hair stands up. Because especially for me and
did you meet Emily Blunt?
Yes, I did. I had scenes with her as well, and a lot of the time in between shots and setups and things like that, I was in a green room, dressing room with Lynn, Emily, and I, and just sitting there talking about life, pretty much.
Gosh,
yeah.
And so that then took you, to the world premiere in London.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously we shot the film, and then it was pretty crazy because the way a film works. So when I'd finished my work on the film, there was a year and a half, time span of post production where you kind of have to be like, you kind of have to forget about it so that you can get on with your life and career and continue sorting things out. But then, about a year and a half later, it was November last year, I went to the world premiere, which was actually in Hollywood in LA at the Dolby Theatre, which was an insane experience to be just brought back into that world and see everyone again and meet people in the film who I hadn't even met when I was working in the film, because I didn't share scenes with them. People like Colin Firth, Meryl Streep, Dick Van Dyke. Like, it was just the most insane thing ever. Yep. And it was actually the first time I was going to see the film in its entirety from beginning to end.
Yep.
So seeing it at the Dolby Theatre was a nerve-wracking experience. I think, I was probably more nervous than when I was on set doing the work.
Yeah. That's incredible. Has any other film work come along since then?
I've had a couple of auditions and things like that, but nothing that's come through yet. But I've been lucky enough to my visa actually expired in London not too long after that, so I've spent the year back in Oz. Before I left London, though, I was lucky enough to do a hip-hop contemporary theatre project in Switzerland and lived there for about a month and a half, which was amazing.
And while you were here last year, you did the musical of Mandela.
Yes. So most recently, I just did a tour of Madiba the Musical, which is a new work celebrating the life of Nelson Mandela.
With the French guy wrote it.
Yes, exactly. Right? Yes, yeah. Jean-Pierre, his name is, and it was originally a French production, and this was, I guess, the English translation premiere, if you like. And that was amazing. I got to tour around. So it was a nice thing to come back into and tour Australia and go to, started in Melbourne, but then went to Sydney, Perth, Canberra, Adelaide, and even visited New Zealand. Yep, and just got back 6 days ago or something like that.
Right.
Also in Melbourne, I did Bring It On, the musical, which was at the Athenaeum, which was amazing. I had a whole bunch of friends that I hadn't seen or worked with in 2 years' time, and to be back on a job with them was so much fun.
And anything in the pipeline, or can't you say?
I have some like kind of exciting things that I can't really say much about, but does mean I will be having to relocate back to London for some kind of final audition / meetings with some important people and things like that. Pretty much by the end of March I'll be back over there and based out of London again to...
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what a brilliant career. What a wonderful life you've already had.
Yeah.
And you're the most loveliest person as well.
Oh, thank you so much.
All the best. Can't wait to see what happens to you in the next couple of years.
Keep track of your career. Seems to be going all over the place, but upwards, basically.
Yeah, right. That's it. Yeah, it's a good time. And I'm super grateful for everything that's happening.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Farrick.
Thank you.
You're here on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.